Hello, everyone. And hello, Nancy. This is Glenda. Welcome, everybody, to our Blessings of Christ today. It's a beautiful day here. So much to be grateful for. I hope it's a lovely day wherever you are. And even if the weather's not great, we're going to help make it a lovely day in your heart and in your life. So, Nancy, how are you today?
I am really wonderful. I am in thanksgiving for this day and what's to come and what would have been. And so it's just been a glorious day for us today, kind of relaxing, getting ready for the lots of family that will be coming in next week. So we're having a little quiet lull today, which is perfect for a Sabbath, a blessing, day of blessing.
Uh-huh.
So it's
well,
been
that's
wonderful.
Kind of unusual for you. Have a quiet on family time.
It really is. So I think we had enough going on yesterday that everybody's taking a break. So
yeah.
It's nice to be together today.
And you've got a new member of your family.
I do, everybody. Little Marcus Elijah was born on the 5th, 7 pounds, 7 ounces. And he's the fifth child for my daughter, Olivia. She has three girls, and then she had a little boy, Cameron, and now she has another little boy. And so they're a bright, vibrant, very happy, big family.
Yeah,
and we're blessed to be just 3 miles away. So, you know, we could be there to support. And so that's really great stuff.
That's great. Yeah. I didn't know they were that close, but it's wonderful they are, because I know that Grandma and Grandpa are going to be a big, important part of that family.
Yeah, it's wonderful
okay.
to be able to help when you can. So anyway,
of
we're
course.
So glad to be together today, Glenda. It's another wonderful day to have a blessing.
Yes, it is. Of course, every day is a wonderful day to have a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys probably don't realize it, but every day I start my day by offering a blessing. And those of you who've written me, asking for a blessing are on my remembrance list for prayers and daily blessings as well. So I'm so glad that you utilized this opportunity to reach me and let me know what you need and what you're praying for so that I can join you. I'm going to be offering prayers and blessings anyway, and there's no scarcity on who can be on that list. I broaden it to the whole planet, but, you know, it would be nice to have some names to put on the list also. So, you know, we're going to be talking about community today. That's chapter 17 in the Keys of Yeshua. I would have to say that from an ordinary casual perspective, this is my favorite chapter in the Keys of Yeshua because I live for community. And everything that has provided my motivation for being here and for taking this work out to the world and diversifying its receivership is because I love community. That's what took me into teaching and everything else I've done, even including when I had a vineyard, studying the community of the vine and what it needs from nature, how the vines work together, what it needs from the earth and the seasons. You know, everything that is part of the makes up the context of our life is our own personal community. And it's all created to work symbiotically, harmoniously together. When anything is not quite what it should be, a good thing to look for is where might there possibly be a little disharmony or something that sort of went off track. You know, like maybe we got distracted with stress or an illness in the family or some unforeseen emergency. And so we put our thoughts on that and we get away from the total general well-being of our life, our household, our family, our community. You know, we go off on a tangent. That's what I'm trying to say. And it's true of anyone. You know, you could get a hangnail that's annoying and get off track for 30 minutes till you take care of it. And that's okay as long as you come back to where you were. But sometimes we don't come back to where we were. One annoyance leads to another and then another and another, and we don't get back on track with our normal life. And so it gets worse. It's kind of contagious. Let's put it that way. Larry, Nancy's going to read you Yeshua's comments about this and his teaching. And I'll break into it a little bit, Nancy, just because you'll probably trigger some thoughts I have that I might want to add serendipitously. And we just make it all work together. So we're sitting here around a kitchen table having a conversation. That's the way I'd like this chapter to unfold. We are so lucky to have you, Nancy, and so glad that you can be here today. Let's see.
Okay.
Nancy, are you going to be here next week, Sunday?
I am. It's the following Sunday.
Okay.
That's on the 7th. I'll be in Missouri. But, yes, I will definitely be here next
okay.
Sunday. So excited to finish up this chapter together.
Okay. And also, I'm going to do a special Thanksgiving blessing privately, except no blessing is really private. The receivers are all here in spirit. If you want to send me a request for blessing on Thanksgiving morning, I'll read it and take it into our Thanksgiving blessing, which will be probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time, something like that. So if you send your request in early, it will be my pleasure to offer you a Thanksgiving blessing. And Nancy, did you have any announcements to make today?
Personal announcements or announcements about our community?
Anything.
What's going on
in the world? Anything you're thinking about? I just wanted to include you in the discussion.
Well, I do think that, I've got other news. I have another daughter, our daughter that we've all been adding to the blessing for actually several years, Jaina and Jason. They are expecting. So that is extraordinary news. They were a couple that had several miscarriages. Yeah, and they're in their early 40s. And so, yes, Jaina and Jason, it's extraordinary. It's wonderful. I do feel like we've been blessed again with this amazing, it's just such a mystery life and pregnancy and all of that. So thank you for everybody. You know, I know this, you know, I'm so touched, Glenda, that you're going to offer a blessing for everyone on Thanksgiving because I will definitely include that Jason and Jaina and send that to you as part of that list. So, but other than that, I mean, just it's amazing reading this chapter, Glenda, and reflecting on how we each make a difference and, you know, we matter, each person. Each person's
absolutely.
Perspective and,
you do.
In our yeah, and it's just, I think we always underestimate that, you know, positive or negative. And I'm loving that you're going to really talk to us about that today, because this is an important time to recognize, how that works and who we are. And,
I know. And some of us are spending Thanksgiving alone. Well, you're not alone. You're going to be with me on Thanksgiving, okay? And actually, that's how I came to make this decision, because I had friends, close friends, asking me, well, Glenda, what are you doing for Thanksgiving? You're going to have dinner with you got family, friends, and I get to thinking, no, I'm probably just going to have a really nice meal, but nothing special. And all of a sudden, it occurred to me, I've got one of the biggest families on earth, the one Yeshua called together for me to enjoy. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I was just thinking about myself. I was thinking about, okay, I'll just be peaceful. I'll have a quiet time. I'll rest, and I'll write on the book. That's going to be another announcement I make shortly. But anyway, and I'll write on the book. It'll be a great day. But it didn't occur to me that I'm going to be with thousands of people who, in saying their prayers and giving thanks, what the work that we do in Spiritus Church will be part of that prayer of thanks. I have a huge family. Well, okay, I need to embrace that, and I want to embrace it. So that's how that came about. And I would really recommend all of you, and especially those who are physically or socially alone, think about how many are with you actually in spirit. Those who went upward ahead of us, they left the physical plane, but they just left ahead of us. They're not leaving us. Never did. Never will. And, you know, just remembering them and giving a thanks to mom and dad or grandma, grandpa, or cousins or brothers or sisters who've gone to, just giving them a thanks is a wonderful way to connect. And they'll be there for you because they haven't gone away. They're still, I mean, literally, they're still there. They just left their physical body along the way. And they're just waiting for you to join them. Now, don't go too fast because I want you here with me. But in time, in due time, we'll all go and join them. And that's just the way life is. That's the way life is. And that's, I think, the ultimate expansion of community. And that is that we never leave our loved ones. Never. Love is without end. Love never dies. Love always connects us because the very powerful function of love is unity, is creating union. Now, I know in a world that has stresses and delights, we tend to focus on love as an emotional feeling, like, oh, she remembered me, or, oh, I can't believe someone really thought about that for me. And we see it emotionally. There's nothing wrong with that. Enjoy it. Roll in it. That's what my cats do. They roll in the things they love. So roll in it. It's great that you have a wonderful emotional reaction to love. But that's not all there is. There are so many, many ways we can focus on and rejoice in our union without it having to be emotionally stimulated. We don't have to see an inspiring movie or listen to an exquisite song. We can just be in our easy chair and be grateful for everyone who's been in our life and the union and the community it brought to us. So actually, I think the timing on this chapter is perfect because when, of all the holidays of our year, the one I most associate with union is Thanksgiving. And actually, the airlines would confirm that. That's when the most travel occurs, family to family, for Thanksgiving. That's when we sit around the table together, or maybe we have to spread two or three tables, one just for the kids. That's the way it was at my family. But we come together. Well, let's come together in spirit. Let's just be here for each other. And then next week on Sunday, we're going to complete this chapter. And I like the second half of the chapter even more than I like the first half. But it's all wonderful. It's really my clover patch that I would go into if I were a pony and feast on. I just love this chapter. Okay, Nancy, we are ready for you.
Oh, wonderful. I'm excited to read this, everyone. So if you want to join along, chapter 17, as Glenda said, Community, the Human Context, and we're on page 211. And Glenda's speaking first, and she says, there are few words loaded with more different meanings than community. When we hear the word, we might think of anything from fellowship to township to global politics. And each meaning would be valid from its own perspective. In many ways, the idea of community is the collective equivalent of love and is applicable to all things. Certainly, it seems that Yeshua espoused the more universal meaning. The foundation of his message consisted of two simple instructions. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And like unto that is the second. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's from Matthew chapter 22. In other words, view love as an extension of yourself to others and upwardly to the divine. Stated more pragmatically, build, sustain, and honor community on all levels. Brenda, can I ask one question there? Are you there, Brenda?
Oh, yeah, sure. I muted myself so I wouldn't have an echo.
Okay, the only thing, I have a question. Gary and I, when we were reading this together, he made a great statement. You know, loving our neighbor as ourselves. There's so many people that don't love themselves, you know? And we were chuckling and thinking, would Yeshua say now, you know, love your neighbor as well as yourself? Because, you know, I see so many folks that, you know, are not loving themselves as they should, you know? And then they struggle with their neighbor. But that was his instruction, love your neighbor as yourself. So,
well, I just... Well, Nancy, that is a very valid point, and I think it's applicable. I think the higher meaning, though, that he's referring to here is empathy. To be able to literally feel as another feels. Mm. And sometimes that could include self-deprecation. Let's just say a person is self-deprecating, but they can see that in another person.
Oh, I like
that.
And that actually
helps them both to pull out of it a little bit. So I think the higher meaning of that statement is empathy. And as we study the importance of empathy, we get actually down to the type of unity that truly builds a civilization.
Oh, thank you. That was perfect.
Yeah. Now, at the same time, we can also want other people to have ice cream if we have ice cream. So it applies on many levels of reality. And I think it just comes down to the fact of, well, let's just move on with this chapter. There's some places where I can make a really important contribution on what you mentioned and how this expands. But I think ultimately the rock bottom would be empathy, because that's the only thing that would apply to feeling like a person is literally in hell, because they feel that way, mm-hmm. and they don't want to share it because they don't want other people to be there, but then they see somebody else that's feeling that way, and the empathy causes union that makes both persons become stronger.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in that. Thank you, Glenda. Really good.
Yeah, let me put this into a context. I think through enough exposure of historians, biographers, and media, we can think back to the death camps of World War II and the life of Anne Frank. One of the things that makes her diary so powerful is how she conveyed her empathy for her family and others that went through a horrific experience, and how she transcended that into a language she could actually write about. Now that is empathy, and that's being there on behalf of everyone else that suffered as she suffered.
Absolutely. Well, you cleared that one up, so thank you. And I'm going to move on. I'm going to just go back to that last comment. Build, sustain, and honor community on all levels. And you're speaking about all those levels. I'll continue. You are saying, on the many occasions that we spoke, it was rare that our conversation did not touch on some aspect of community. These references were historical, reverent, practical, and timeless. One of his conversations that most clearly revealed his thoughts about community began as an historical anecdote on the beginnings of communal bonding and sharing. And this is Yeshua. All of the categories and subcategories of life are defined by the natural chains of support that create living community. The science of ecology has mapped the network of ecosystems in vivid detail. These ecosystems are natural communities of life. Often, the network of one system will overlap that of another, and many may combine into a larger integrated community. Once, very long ago, human communities were intimately tied to the land, to the biological family, and the ecosystem, providing their sustenance. In the beginning, this was the only basis for unity. But divine consciousness ordained that man would also develop communities of thought, spirituality, purpose, industry, and conscious sharing. A great leap was necessary for man to develop collective values. That propulsion came from the discovery of fire, the controllable form of energy. Fire provided warmth in the winter, light in the dark, and nourishing food for large numbers of people. As fuel, it turned the first wheels of human industry. It was the center of every camp and village. More importantly, fire brought a great intangible lesson that would stimulate movement toward larger, more complex networks of economic support. The realization was that sharing this valuable commodity or extending it to others did not diminish the quantity of fire for oneself. To the contrary, sharing fire only created more. By sharing, each family and tribe was more secure in the knowledge that this vital resource would not be extinguished. Here is a truth that elevates cohabitation into community. The quality of life for all is more assured by the survival of each person. And the quality of life for each person is more assured by the survival of the whole. Your neighbor's survival adds to your own. Fire gave man his first lesson in this truth. Once this lesson was learned, it quickly spread to other applications, such as the sharing of seed reserves, technology, labor, knowledge, and belief. progress continued uninterrupted for millennia until the idea of scarcity was presented as a very sophisticated form of, quote, knowledge. Beliefs changed quickly. Neighbor turned upon neighbor, and village upon village, until every generation would have to contend with war. Scarcity was an important discovery within mid-range perception and intelligence, but it was tragically misapplied to human society. The principle of scarcity is certainly valid for such mechanistic functions as engineering, where the balance of cause and effect must be determined in solid, pre-existing properties, or in any science, where the energy being used is already in a state of entropy. Nevertheless, it applies to only the smallest dimension of the universe, and most certainly does not limit the greater law of the human heart and community. Glenda, I don't know if you wanted to respond to anything there.
Yes, I would. I thought about responding during what you said, and it was just so beautiful. I didn't want to interrupt, and my comments will not go away. So they're still there, and I just want to speak about everything actually together. Let's start with the concept of fire. I think everybody's got the idea that when you, if you've got one candle, all you need is two or three more, and you can spread the fire without diminishing it from any one person. There are many, many things in life that fit into this. One is optimism. One is good news. That's what Yeshua sent the apostles out to the world to spread, was good news. That you don't have to stay in this state of entrapment and bereavement that so many people were into, pain, hunger. You know, in those days, the number one cause of death was starvation. I it's hard to believe today, but it was. It was worse than any other medical condition. It was so great. People didn't generally live past the age of 40, and it was mostly because in a state of food scarcity, which did exist, which is why starvation was so high, that food was given a priority to children and working people. Who the children were the future of the community, and the working people were the maintenance of the community. And over a certain age, people only received a very bare minimum of enough to stay alive. And so the death rate over 35 was pretty high. Now, that's an example of the fact that scarcity can actually exist. Now, where does that come from? I'm going to revise where I am. I'm going to go back to fire because I want to talk about one more thing with fire that we really need to apply to our consciousness. Today, we take fire literally for granted. I mean, we could find it almost anywhere. We could collect it after a thunderstorm or any other person could have a little bit of fire, and pretty soon everybody's got some fire. It's that adaptable and conveyable. But let's just roll the clock back about a million years, or the first time that people were thinking about the fact that, well, they noticed that after a strike of lightning, some wood would be burning. They didn't know that they could catch it on fire to another limb that they put in that fire, but that's what was eventually discovered, that a stick was put into a burning fire that lightning had created. And that stick was just held apart from the fire and I noticed that it would keep burning on its own. It didn't have to be inside the mother fire. They could just sustain the fire because it was just self-consuming. And then someone came and put another stick into it, and the fire became two fires. And somebody else came in, put a stick into it, and the two fires became three, four, or five fires. Now, the point I want to make is, how long did it take? How long did it take for prehistoric humans to discover that you could take fire out of something that lightning created? Obviously, lightning's been around since before there were humans, and obviously, humans have observed it. How long did it take before someone thought about putting a stick in the fire and transmitting the stick to something that he or she controlled? How long did that take? Millions of years. A long, long time. Now, what if that one person that ignited fire from the mother fire and held it on a stick had not shared it? What if that guy or gal, you know, out curiously wondering around and said, I wonder what would happen if I did this. Okay, what if that didn't happen? And that person then who had the fire didn't share it. Let's say he just let the stick burn out and consume itself, and he just had an ember that he threw on the ground because he didn't want to burn his hands, and then stomped it out. What if that's as far as it went? You know, what would we have today? Well, we'd still be watching lightning make fires in the forest. See, the thing is, we have to innovatively connect with possibilities that are happening all around us. Fire is just one idea. There's so many innovative possibilities that we could hold on to and then share with somebody else and say, what do you think would happen if we had this? What do you think would happen over here? Well, I don't know. Let's ask Henry. And Henry says, well, gee, I don't know. I think Martha had an idea like that once upon a time. I'll ask her. In other words, we build possibilities through community. Community is how all of these new discoveries are infused into utility. You know, Joe discovers fire, asks Henry, Henry asks his wife, the wife asks her mother, who asks her husband, who shows it to the kids, and then the kids said, oh yeah, we've seen that in the forest all the time, but you told us not to touch it. You know, but we have community breakthroughs. And as community, we then become the developmental link. Like I said, how long was fire observed in the forest before anyone connected with it? And then what if that played out and we had to wait another 1,000 years before another prehistoric human connected with it? It's community that is our vital connection. So now we get on to scarcity. Mm-hmm. And it is a very real thing, especially if we look at the history of food and the availability of it to keep humans alive. And in addition to that, feed our animals, that we can work together to develop nutritional sources that can nourish other people. Well, it took us a long time. We didn't have that for eons. We were just hunters and gatherers, and we took what was available by nature, but we never knew if there was a drought coming, or if there was a volcano going to clear out a whole forest in our region. We'd have to migrate and find food somewhere else. We didn't know. We didn't know how to expand on those opportunities. And many people died because of that. You know, we think, sometimes we think of these people as just, primitive Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. We're just out camping and we dig weeds and we pick berries and, we catch rabbits on the ground or birds in the air. And yeah, we make do. You know, we think of it innocently. It wasn't that way. It wasn't. And it was through empathy and caring for one another that we had the community as our impulse and our driving effort to find food for everybody. You know, there is overall great abundance in the ecological existence of life. Great abundance. But it's not all evenly distributed. There is the law of conservation that governs everything in our physical universe, as we've talked about in preceding presentations. The physical universe requires balance. And if you lose something, you've got to get it back. It won't tolerate imbalance. This is basically the law that's behind the commonly quoted phrase, the universe abhors a vacuum. It will fill it with something. Well, yeah, because it won't tolerate imbalance. So there's a demand for balance, but also because of random effects, random causes and effects, there's often not equal distribution of wealth, food, and safety, and other effects in life. And that unequal distribution creates the belief in scarcities. There really isn't any scarcity, but there is unequal distribution. And right. This is what... And this is what a lot of political turmoil is about. And hatred generates from the people who don't have, hating the ones that have, not helping to redistribute. We as communities have to love one another as ourselves in order to maintain a spirit of distribution. When we see lack or a need of support, we redistribute in order to see that we're all at least adequately taken care of, and the failure in distribution is compensated for. Now, we've got a lot of very, very creative ways of doing that have worked for periods of time. When in this country, small businesses, small farms, people taking care of their families and then helping each other work for a couple of centuries. Now we've got crowded cities, and that ability to distribute is being challenged. We're going to have to get really smart about that, guys, because we do not want this to result in rebellion, war, revolution, hatred, and other symptoms of disarray in the human human community. We've got to take care of one another, and we've got to figure out some better ways to doing it. It doesn't work for governments to own everything and then the government redistribute, because there's no human consciousness in that. There are better ways, and we're going to find it, and it will be as important as the discovery of fire. When we finally do discover that, it's going to change everything. There's a quote from Galileo. I think probably most of you know that Galileo was an astronomer who changed our perspective on everything by pronouncing that our cosmic organization of planets, the Earth and the planets and the sun, was heliocentric. In other words, it goes around the sun, not revolving around the Earth. That's, he was innovative in other respects as well, a brilliant mathematician. But that's his most famous contribution. It was something like, he was asked about will people be able to understand this? And he said, the difficulty in understanding something is not in the thing itself. It's in discovering it in the first place. In other words, what we're talking about now, the heliocentric movement of our solar system, is something we take for granted. But there was a time when no one would have even thought of it. They would not have even thought of it, that it was possible. It took one person to think about it. You see, discovering something may go back to one person. And actually, all it takes is one person. But what happens after that is what brings it into the human community, and that is sharing it, revealing it, carrying the good news. Yeshua came here as one person to reveal what was possible for humanity. But it wasn't going to go anywhere if he didn't have apostles to take it out and share it. And the success in that sharing is that centuries later, Rome came begging to the Christians for fellowship in order to save the Roman Empire. So that's how important sharing is. Discovering may be one person or a few, whatever it takes. I'll give you an example, but without sharing, it becomes nothing. And I'll give you really, not commonly known, but a classic example of that, is that Leonardo da Vinci made close, detailed designs and specifications for a helicopter. This was in the Italian Renaissance. These designs are in a museum. I mean, they're mm-hmm. legendary. But there was no one to share it with. There was no technology to implement it. You know, there's a right time for things, and sometimes we can discover something and we know that it's true, but there was no matrix for sharing, or it could have been stifled, as in the case of Nikola Tesla. He discovered many things, and he shared it. He shared it with someone who was more interested in suppressing it than developing it. So we're still not completely recovered in our understanding of what he discovered. But it exemplifies the fact that sometimes our discoveries are unique. Sometimes it is just one person or a small number of people. Albert Einstein had never, you know, he discovered the law of relativity. No one had ever done that. We were still very, very locked in to the laws of Isaac Newton, which feed upon the idea of entropy. The universe is consuming itself, or what was the law of conservation, which is there has to be an equal and opposite balance to all things. But Albert Einstein discovered the quantum field, where there's no limit to anything, and everything is relative. Well, not very many people knew what to do with that, but it did draw into his circle of knowledge and intelligence some brilliant other physicists who developed the idea. And so we have today quantum physics. But it started with one. And then it grew into a community. And now it's something that possibly and probably will change the world. It will probably bring a limitless access to energy, a full and complete understanding of the magnetic possibilities that Nikola Tesla discovered and declared, but were not ready to be developed. So there is an integral link in community to everything great that has ever developed in the history of humanity. I love this. This creates our link with God. So God created everything that was basic to existence. And then he put us here to be present so that as these things were discovered, we can develop them. We can share them. We can create the rest of life as God intended it and as God intended for us to have it together. And this is all completely summarized in the two final commandments that Yeshua gave us. And so, yes, there can be the apparent existence of scarcity because of imbalance, which need not be permanent. It can be corrected, and it needs to be corrected. And we're going to find this limitless field of energetic potential that will help us to adjust and correct these temporary imbalances from distribution that never got recycled. And then as we develop our understanding of ecology, well, we've got another thing we can put together and solve. And let me give you an example of that. It has to do with water. Now, a lot of people are really concerned about what's happening to the waters of the earth. And that concern is very, very legitimate. It's not something to overreact to. It's better something to understand and then focus on the cleansing of water and the redistribution of H2O. So that it can be filtered and brought back into the surface of earthly life and to nourish life and the environment as it always has. One of the things that's been discovered are deep rivers under the continent. Apparently, to the best of our ability to conclude at the moment, they're a little bit like an enormous cooling system that allows the core of the earth to be ablaze and molten, but not collapse on itself, because these rivers deeply underground provide the cooling system. And the water from these deeply, deeply rivers have actually been drawn up and tasted. And they're not really something you'd want to drink. They're highly mineralized and not really clear. But it's an interesting experience, the people who've tasted them and drawn them up. And, of course, there's a lot of thought on what can we do with these rivers, and are they really coming up to replenish the surface of the earth? Well, the answer is yes. And what we don't know is what is the system of circulation. There is plenty of water on our earth to take care of us till the end of time. And by the law of conservation, this water is being recycled constantly. We just don't know how. We've got to learn. Somebody's got to come up with an explanation for how and what to do. And then it will be normalized. But I've got a really, really wonderful example for you. When I lived in North Texas years and years ago, not in this section of my life, but a long time ago, I would frequently go to the Ozark Mountains, which are on the four corners of Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And there's some beautiful, beautiful crystalline lakes, and even today, it's a major source of spring water that you could find in grocery stores, or you could go there and get some in your jar coming straight out of the earth. I don't know how pure it is, but I was interested enough to check into it with research labs who were trying to answer questions that I was asking. And I was totally bowled over when I learned that, I'm going to get some water just a minute. When I learned that by carbon dating, the water I had collected, it was brought up to the surface to where it could be, not surface, but into the deep rivers. It was brought up at the time Moses lived. It took then about, 2,000 years to bring it out of the side of that hill that I collected into my jar of water. That's ancient. Ancient. Now, the potential is there. What do we do with it? Let's direct our young scientists to be bold, adventuresome, and curious enough to ask that question. You know, it only takes one person to put that first stick in the fire and then to take it out and share. It took one divine person to come here and exemplify for us the fact that we're not just a human body, we're a soul. And that soul has a life of its own. And that soul is our immortality. And then the news went out to the world. And because of that, we're a better human race. We're not perfect. We haven't gotten there yet. But we're better. And we get better with every generation. So have faith in the new kids. You know, they're coming up with ideas that may be different from ideas we had. But one of them's going to come up, two of them, three, four, five, maybe 1,000 of them, will come up with ideas that are as important as the discovery of fire. It's in us to have that sense of discovery. It's in us to support one another as community so that then those discoveries become a way of life. We actually have a great future, my friends. And I know it's easy to get discouraged because there are serious problems in the world. But we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the power of community to bring the best of ideas to the surface and support those who are bringing the best of ideas to us that make a difference in our world and make a difference in the life of each other. That's what we need to support as community. And you might say, yeah, but, you know, people are going to think I'm crazy if I say this. Well, they might at first, but after the impact settles down on them, they might scratch their head and think, well, what if it might be true? What if it might be true? That's a big question. What if we might be able to spread fire to all these communities? And then we have something that everybody wants and everybody shares in common. That's a big thought. One of my favorites. So it is almost 4 o'clock. And Nancy, you got any thoughts about this?
I'm a little awestruck. You know, it's just, I'm awestruck, and it's incredible, you know, that everything you're sharing is so hopeful for now and our future, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think our mind really got in the way with these ideas of scarcity, and, you know, when you step out of the heart realm and into the mind domination, and I think we've got to be really vigilant about those things, but at the end of the day, like you said, I mean, the way God has created us and the nature of reality, you know, observing these relationships and these patterns. It goes back to that River of Life chapter we read. They connect so perfectly. It's extraordinary. You know, how structure seems to dominate, but, you know, the heart can rearrange any of that. And I love that he said, I love what we just read earlier when, you know, divine consciousness ordained that man would also develop communities of thought, spirituality, purpose, industry, and conscious caring. And, I mean, look what we can do. It's
exactly. It's hard to believe, but we are the answer. And Yeshua loves every single one of us deeply. He would give his life for any one of you. As a matter of fact, he's already done that. So that's not something you have to believe is a fairy tale. He has done that, and he would do it again. Every single one of you. He loves you.
And he loved one fish, and he changed. I mean, I'm always fascinated by I'm fascinated by the particles and, you know, structure limits things and makes it just one fish. But that's not God's economy or God's reality. It's not about scarcity. It's about infinity and abundance and the quality. It's incredible, everything you've shared today, Glenda. Just a lot, really.
Well, you can tell I love this chapter. I mean, I really do. Because it connects with us and where we live. You know, some of the things we read are a little bit in outer space or something we think, I'm glad Yeshua understands that. It may take me a while, you know, and we could have that response. But this is something everybody can understand, and I just love that.
And I love that you said you start the day with these blessings and, you know, nurturing your heart, because that really makes your heart strong. And structure is not a match for that. And there's something, you're able to receive this information. You're able to understand. You're able to share it, you know, just because of, you know, what the gratitude and that attitude that you have.
Yeah.
You know, you're telling us all what, it's just beautiful. Thank you, Glenda.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Nancy, go to the board and see if anybody's wanting to jump in.
I sure will. We have got a caller. Welcome. The line is open.
Cool. Hello, Nancy. Hello, Glenda. This is Stephen Adler, and I just wanted to... Hi, how you guys doing? This is a great, great call. I just am so enjoying it. Thank you so much. And I just want to share a couple things. One, I love what you were saying about the commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. And a couple years ago, I kind of had this idea of looking at that in a way that maybe some people don't look at it in this way. I don't know. But basically, of course, it's the idea that, you know, we bring empathy, which I love, and this idea that, you know, hopefully we love ourselves a lot. So, you know, then that if we're commanded to love others like we love ourselves, then, you know, of course, we'd want to love ourselves a lot. So that translates. But also, I kind of had this idea that love your neighbor as yourself, meaning like as yourself, not as somebody else, or not as like, you know, some sort of fake identity or
exactly.
Your inauthentic or,
yes.
your inauthentic self. In other words, so, you know, love
mm-hmm.
yourself as like mm-hmm. your true essence, love your innocent soul, you know. And I thought, and I think sometimes that that sort of interpretation or translation gets lost in many
yes,
cases.
I totally want to reinforce that. True.
Yeah, and then regarding community, the last few days here it's been really cold and rainy. I've got a couple of beehives in my backyard, and today it cleared and it's been pretty sunny and warm all day. And so I decided to feed them some sugar water, and they are celebrating. So I'm in celebration with my bee community today. They're flying through my house and flying all over the backyard and all over the place in celebration. And it's a lot of fun, you know, when they're basically in a state of celebration. I think they themselves were you know, not too happy about this really cold, cold storm that came through at this time of the year.
Where are you, Stephen?
I'm in Joshua Tree, California, which is, you know, it's Southern California,
okay.
So it never gets really super cold, but it's kind of high desert, so it can... You know, in the winter it does drop down to freezing. So, and this last storm though put a lot of snow in around the surrounding mountains. So it's actually really beautiful right now. Lots of beautiful snow all in the mountains. So, but yeah. So the temperatures can swing pretty significantly here in short periods of time.
Well, that's
but,
okay.
Pretty...
It'll balance out. It'll balance out. And yeah, and you're helping it with the beat. I know they know it's coming from you.
Oh yeah, no, they definitely know. And then pretty soon, actually, in a few weeks, I'm heading to England for a few months, and so that's where it's really cold, actually.
Of course,
so,
I know.
So,
yeah,
it'll
I
be
have
freezing
a, I have
and
a dear friend
and,
in England.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and I get the weather report all the time.
Yeah. So I'll be dealing with that until I don't know, probably the end of February. So, but anyway, yeah, I just love this you know this topic of community because you know it's an illusion that there's no community. You know, usually when we feel alone, it's just it's just our mind that's playing that trick on us, you know, because the one spirit always keeps us connected to everything.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an illusion of having, that comes from having a limited perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Glenda, thank you for opening up our call today with just reflecting on your own Thanksgiving and, you know, enjoy about understanding that. But, you know, it's okay. It's okay to have a quiet day, and you don't have to be surrounded in the physical realm, you know. It's just, I appreciate that, because there are a lot of folks that'll have a Thanksgiving that's kind of holy and sacred like that, but they don't always see it that way. So you said it with the joy in your heart.
Yeah, y'all think about this. 2:00 Thursday, Central Time, I'm going to be offering a blessing to everybody. So tune in, all right? And I'll be there with you.
I love that. Thank you, Stephen. We're so glad you came today and that you shared.
Oh,
it's always wonderful.
Thank you.
Our board is clear, Glenda.
All right. Well, let's just put everybody on mute so that. Okay. Well, let's just be, let's now take this time to just be in our heart, to be quiet with ourselves and appreciative of everything that we have in life. It may not seem like enough at times, but there's always more that we can access for our benefit to fill in any state of imbalance that may exist. Because actually, the universe is always on your side wanting to rebalance. That's when you can count on it. Our universe is our, and let's just get down to the specifics, our planet. All right. Let's get down to more specifics. Our human community, our country, all of our communities actually have this tendency always to rebalance. And so it's not that hard to get some equity and rebalance. You just have to ask for it. Seek it. Believe in it. Hold it in your heart. And ask with your whole heart, mind, and soul. And it will come to you. It will. There is no imbalance that cannot be cured, because our Heavenly Father created the material side of our universe to operate always on the system of balance. Always. Always on the system of balance. It's always there. So now what I want us to practice, if you can stand up, please do it. Otherwise, find a way to just do it in your chair. I want you to stand up, and I want you to feel your body being in a state of balance with the earth. If you're lying down or sitting down, just experience the balancing of your arms, your legs, how everything moves into balance with the law of gravity. You know, you try holding your hand up, but it'll be pulled down to rest on the arm of your chair. Whatever you do will have a tendency toward balance. It happens automatically, instinctively, it's there. If you inhale, you're going to want to exhale. That law of balance is in everything. So let's start with that. Let's just start with a breath. Let's take a really deep breath. Fill your lungs by lowering your diaphragm and also by taking breath up into your sinus cavities. Hold as much breath inside your body as you can for 1 or 2 seconds. And now begin exhaling. Not all at once, just let it out slowly until you compress as much air as you can from your lungs and your sinuses and empty them until they have compressed it all out. And now begin to take it back in again. Breathe. Inhale. And feel the air going deep into your lungs or high into your sinuses. And feel it all. And now let's take it one step further. Feel your heart receiving that oxygen and taking it into your bloodstream so that you will begin to circulate that wonderful, beautiful air into the rest of your body. We don't really mostly recognize this, but actually our whole body is breathing too. If you really put your attention on it, you can feel your legs and your arms and your head and your neck, your shoulders expanding as you inhale, because they're receiving more oxygen in their blood. Every part of you is part of that breath. It's not just your lungs. It's not just into your sinuses. It's into your whole body. This is what we miss in life. We don't realize that prosperity in anything will benefit everybody. We think that breaths are shallow, and actually that's the problem with shallow breathing, is that it can give your body the idea that there's not enough oxygen to go around, and your body can suffer from that. Every hour, you need to take some deep breaths and contemplate the fact that you're breathing for your whole body, for your whole person, for every part of you, and not just the physical. The oxygen that goes to your brain can help you think better. The oxygen that goes to your legs can give you more sustainable strength. You can walk longer. The oxygen that goes to your hands can keep your mobility in your hands more flexible and active for longer. Whatever you're doing, you're typing, you're creating a craft, you're cooking, whatever you're doing, your hands will stay more limber if you send that oxygen into your hands and your feet. One of the areas we really pull up with badly is our feet and our legs, because we're not drawing it up, back up into our lungs and our heart as well as we should. And it can actually be very, very therapeutic to just lie down and take deep breaths that focus upon our legs and then pulling that oxygen and the blood back up into our body. So I want you to do that, especially if you're those of you who may be reclining and needing to recline, or those of you sitting or standing, pull it up. Get your blood to moving. And in the act of doing that, you're going to stimulate your lymphatic system. And that's a really good thing to have. Be active, because you're going to probably get some healing blessing for some part of you in what you're going to experience. Some part of it will go toward relief or healing or making your body into a more operational system. So be aware of it, and actually just remember that your lymphatic system doesn't have a heart. The lymphatic system depends upon your breath and your physical movement in order to keep it moving. Your entire immune system depends upon that. Your white blood count depends upon that. You've got to keep your lymphatic system moving. So even if you can't walk, figure out ways to get your body moving a little bit every hour. It will help your healing a lot. And it will help you attract healing energy and ideas that will benefit your health. And nourishment, it will carry nourishment into your body. So be mindful of all of these systems that circulate through your body. And it all begins with your breath, just like the moment of living began with your breath. And so it is. Now, let's do just a little bit of stretching. I'm not going to take you through a whole stretching protocol, but do what you can. Reach your arms out, extend your legs, your toes, and what we want to do is we want to relieve some of the muscular tension that might have been built up from just sitting too long or not moving. So whatever you can do to just stretch, relieve any lack of tension or lack of mobility in your muscles would be a really good thing. And now we're going to initiate the first steps of our blessing. Blessing givers, will you join me? Will you stand with me? I'm going to offer a prayer, an invocation to Yeshua. Yes, he's already here. He's with us always. He's always, always with us. But he allows us to have our sovereignty, even if we're not doing something right. He still respects our sovereignty. Even if we're not conducting our life properly, he still respects our sovereignty. He's just there to let you know somebody cares about you. You're not alone. And I'm here to watch over you. But he's not going to do anything until you ask. He said that to the apostles. You've got to ask. Why? Well, the first reason is to open the door so that you're in a receiver position. Most of the time, we're actually blocked from receiving. We don't want to admit this because we want to say, well, the world is just not giving us anything. The other side of that coin is, are you willing to receive? Are you open to receiving? Maybe the answer is yes. Maybe it's, well, conditional. Well, yeah, of course I'll receive good things. I'm not going to receive the rest. Well, sometimes our conditions get in the way because we don't always know what's best for us. We don't know what's possible. We don't know what could bless us. So, yeah, I think it's okay to have some conditions, of course. That's part of being a discerning and caring, responsible person. But maybe it gets a little too much at times. And just relaxing and opening to the possibility of some flavor of ice cream we didn't think we would like. And then we discover, well, that's okay. Maybe it actually will be good. You know, just let yourself be a little bit open, all right? And the other reason that we need to ask, and it's a big one, is because we need to be responsible. We need to conduct the transaction ourselves. And I'll just say it, pardon me, in simple human terms. You can't buy a house without signing a contract or presenting an offer to the seller. In other words, you have to take an active role in anything you want to acquire. You can't acquire a meal without first reviewing the menu and placing your order. You must be an active participant. That's the biggest reason why you have to ask. And your Heavenly Father is teaching you that you're not going to accomplish anything in passivity. You have to stand up and ask. So, I'm going to ask for all of us. And then, while you're receiving the blessing, you continue asking for yourself. And you might say, well, why shouldn't I just be quiet? Well, if that's your way of asking, then good. That's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to ask, but I'm going to give you this metaphor. Everything is spirit. There's spirit in you, around you, and through you. And what you receive is a little bit like your Wi-Fi system. You gotta have a receiver. Or, in older terms, a television. You're not going to receive TV reception if you don't have a receiver. And long before that, we had radios. Without the radio, we couldn't pick up those frequencies that were all around us and being sent to us, but we couldn't receive them. So that's, you refine the receiving by giving it a thought, an image, a need, a presentation, and also asking humbles us. And in receiving the blessings of God, a little bit of humility is a really, really good thing. Because we recognize that we could not do this ourselves. And yet, we are important enough to our Creator that He would do it for us. So there's actually three reasons. And now, let us just be in a state of surrender, ready to receive. And I will offer my prayers to Yeshua. O Lord, Yeshua, our brother, our friend, the one who is here for us always, who teaches, guides, and protects us from the dangers or the inadequacies of life, we ask that you hear our prayers today and you recognize our tangible need for you, that we love you and we need you in our life. And we ask for your blessing. We ask for your intervention. We ask that you would open the door to a rebalancing of any inadequacy that we have in our life. We thank you for loving us and caring enough to do that for us. We ask that you would bless one another so that we all may have our needs met, so that we all may feel our importance to this great creative concept that God set forth, our Heavenly Father created us for on this earth. Make us available. Make us ready to receive and help us to know whatever has been given to us that we may receive responsibly for all that we may do for it and all that we may give into it. We ask that you be with those who don't yet know that they can even pray, who don't yet know that you're here, who don't yet know that unlimited abundance and care and love is waiting for them to ask and receive. And we ask for the children who are here with all the love they bring, and yet life is still a mystery to them. And they depend upon us for care and guidance, for care and direction. I ask that we be collectively the best parents we can be, that we create the best atmosphere and love and schooling for them, and health and teaching and responsibility, that they may fulfill their dreams, and they may bring dreams to our world that we never even thought were possible. We thank you for recycling everything and taking those who are ready to go home into the high palaces of our homeland and reuniting us with our dearest loved ones who are already in our homeland waiting to receive us. Like everything, you bring us to where we belong. We seek that belonging. We want to belong to one another. And most of all, we want to belong with you. So thank you again for all the blessings that you shall bring and have brought through the ages. Amen. Amen. And amen. We relax. We surrender. And we receive. Now, blessing givers, will you please join me in conducting this precious and holy energy of the Holy Spirit. Let us begin. Amen. Amen. And amen. Your blessing has been given. Now, I want you to just continue receiving, but do this lying down. Find a flat place to lie down on. You bet. A sofa, a mat on the floor, the ground, whatever appeals to you, just be flat so that all parts of your body are on an equal plane and equally open to receiving whatever blessing and all the blessings that are being given to you. It's okay if you fall asleep, but don't think. Don't continue your prayer now. Just be quiet in a state of complete peace. Surrender and peacefulness. I wish you a wonderful, happy Thanksgiving in which you are thankful for everything. Blessings to you for now and always. And I will be with you. Okay. Bye-bye.